recent memo sent to local priests by the Madison Diocese caused some outrage among Catholics in Wisconsin, some of them, and around the country. The memo outlines how to handle requests for funeral rites for gay and lesbian parishioners in open same-sex relationships. The memo seeks to avoid what it calls a scandal. It also says that priests should consider, among other issues, whether or not the deceased advocated for what the memo refers to as the gay lifestyle, or whether or not the person repented before their death. Questions have arisen since the document was leaked about how the Catholic Church should approach working with its LGBTQ parishioners and whether or not the memo reflects the values of Catholics today. Father James Martin joins us now. He's a Jesuit priest and editor-at-large for America Magazine. He's the author of the book Building a Bridge, How the Catholic Church and the LGBT Community Can Enter into a Relationship of Respect, Compassion, and Sensitivity. Father Martin, welcome to Central Time.
Thanks. Good to be with you.
Before we get to the wider issues you tackle in your book, what's your reaction to what you've seen of this memo here in Wisconsin?
Well, I think it's lamentable because it focuses just on one group of people and particularly on the sexual morality of one group of people. I think the problem with a lot of letters like these is not that the church doesn't have the authority to say, you know, who, you know, is admitted to the sacraments, but rather that there aren't sort of comparable restrictions on, you know, straight people who are, you know, not living according to the sexual morality of the church. So, for example, you know, we would never say, imagine a case where you have a young man, you know, who, God forbid, is in college and dies in an accident. You know, you would never say you can't bury him because he was having sex with his girlfriend, and you would never bar the girlfriend from coming to the funeral. And that's the problem, I think, with a lot of these things. They really are just focused on LGBT people.
The concern seems to be not wanting to be seen as endorsing something that's contrary to the teachings of the church. So the memo talked about not recognizing, say, that same-sex partner or spouse. So as an analogy, that the girlfriend you mentioned might be allowed to be at the funeral, but the funeral ceremony wouldn't maybe give her a prominent role. Is that a valid comparison?
Yeah, that is a valid comparison, and I think the point is that when we have had funerals like that, the girlfriend usually is, you know, front and center, and people interview her, and she might give a eulogy, and there's never a hint that because the couple was having premarital sex, which is also against church teaching, that she should not only be not allowed to come and not allowed to speak, but also that the guy, you know, let's say the young man, the young college student, wouldn't get a Catholic funeral. So I think it's really what the Catechism calls a situation of unjust discrimination. That is, you're focusing just on this group of people, the LGBT community, and just on their sexual morality. And, you know, it's unthinkable that that would happen to a young straight couple who are, you know, living together or sleeping together before being married. It's just unthinkable. And so I think it's really lamentable that we're focusing so much on just LGBT people.
And I want to get into the wider issues you tackle in your book now. And I understand you started really considering the relationship between your church and the LGBT community after the Orlando nightclub shooting at a gay dance club. Can you talk about that?
Right. I had written a few articles in America Magazine, where I work as an editor, about LGBT Catholics, but I really hadn't taken a kind of sort of front and center role, as it were. And I noticed that after the Pulse nightclub massacre, that very few bishops reached out or expressed condolences or even sympathy to the LGBT community. And those that did, you know, could barely bring themselves to mention the words gay or LGBT. And it really shocked me, because if that were in, let's say, a Methodist church, God forbid, or a Presbyterian church, and people were massacred, you know that bishops would say, we stand with our Methodist brothers and sisters, or we stand with our Presbyterian brothers and sisters, but there was nothing comparable to the LGBT community, and it really reminded me that, you know, even in death, LGBT people are largely invisible in the Catholic Church, and that sort of led to the publication of this book.
What response would you like to have seen from the church, from bishops around the country?
Well, the same kind of response that the U.S. Bishops' Conference or any bishops have when a similar tragedy happens. I mean, if there's a it was a shooting, right? And I think after Las Vegas, for example, which I think, unfortunately exceeded the number of people that were killed in Orlando, we had church leaders and bishops, and the U.S. Bishops' Conference expressed their support and their sympathy. And I think there was a sense of their being tongue-tied because what happened in Orlando happened to largely a gay population. I think it illustrates this great gap that there is in our church between church leadership and LGBT people.
Talking to Father James Martin, author of the book Building a Bridge, How the Catholic Church and the LGBT Community Can Enter into a Relationship of Respect, Compassion, and Sensitivity. And Father Martin, what is formal church policy when it comes to LGBT issues? I don't know if that's a quick and easy answer to give, but broad strokes, what is policy?
Well, the broad strokes, first of all, is that they're beloved children of God. That's the most important thing. So it is not a sin to be LGBT, right? And they are to be respected. They're baptized Catholics, if we're talking about, just Catholics. Homosexual activity and same-sex marriage is off the table. That's impermissible. But, when we talk about church teaching, I think we also need to look beyond the catechism and look at the Gospels. And church teaching is fundamentally the Gospels, and Jesus asks us to reach out to people on the margins, to welcome them, and to really make people feel included. So I think that also needs to be factored into the situation.
That seems like a tough starting point for bridge building if the policy is this part of your behavior and the option of being married, they're off the table from the start. I mean, how do you bridge that gap?
Well, I would say yes and no because, there's certainly a lot of LGBT people. I would say most LGBT Catholics disagree with that. But, their lives are more than just sex, and their lives are more than just marriage. Most LGBT people who I know simply want to be, first, accepted, as parishioners, as faithful parishioners, so feeling welcome in their own parishes, not always being castigated from the pulpit, not always being singled out, having special outreach programs to them, maybe LGBT outreach groups. So, there's a lot of stuff that we can talk about that does not need to go into the areas of sexual relations or marriage. It's like saying if you were to get up in front of a group of college students and talk about, giving them advice or talk about their future, you wouldn't only talk about sex. So I think what's happened in the church is we've reduced LGBT people simply to sexual beings, and I think that's part of who they are, but it's not the totality of who they are.
There's been some response in Catholic communities from other priests, among others, to your book and what you've been saying. I understand you've been uninvited from some speaking gigs in part because of this. Do you see the church hierarchy being ready to listen to what you're saying?
Yeah, it's important to note that the book has the approval of my Jesuit superiors, two cardinals, including Cardinal Kevin Farrell, who's works in the Vatican, endorsed it. Also, Cardinal Joseph Tobin, Archbishop of Newark, three archbishops, three bishops. And 99% of the people of God, that is the Catholic faithful, have been really positive and have welcomed the book. And that's really clear, especially LGBT Catholics. Yeah, and there's a very vocal sort of far-right fringe group, I would say, who are really opposed to the book and are really opposed to the whole idea of any sort of welcome to LGBT Catholics. Now, that may be a kind of a bad summary of the response. There are some thoughtful critics, but, there are a lot of Catholics out there who, are very welcoming to the book. So that's the group I tend to focus on.
And you also pitch this message not just to the church hierarchy, but to LGBT Catholics, too. What would you like to see from them?
Well, the book's subtitle is taken from the Catechism, Respect, Compassion, and Sensitivity. That's what the church is supposed to be doing as an outreach. That's right from the Catechism. But I say that while the onus is on the institutional church to reach out to these people who have felt so marginalized, that is LGBT Catholics, for so long, the LGBT Catholic community needs to respond, with respect, compassion, and sensitivity towards church leaders because they're Christian, basically. It's a hard thing to hear. I think it's very challenging, but, that's part of being a Christian, which is treating the other person with dignity and respect. So I'm calling for a bridge where both sides are, willing to listen and willing to encounter one another, which is one of Pope Francis's sort of favorite words, encounter. And I think listening is the beginning part of all of this.
We're talking to Father James Martin right now. He's a Jesuit priest and editor at large for America Magazine. He's with us now to talk about the relationship between the Catholic Church and its lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender parishioners after a memo from the Catholic Diocese in Madison about how to handle funeral rites for Catholics who have openly had same-sex partnerships. You can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. What was your reaction to that memo? If you're a Catholic member of the LGBTQ community or vice versa, what was your reaction to the news? And what do you think about your relationship to the church, what the church thinks of you? Give us a call, 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We continue our conversation now about the relationship between the Catholic Church and the LGBT community. That's been in the news in Wisconsin with a controversy over a Madison Diocese memo on funeral rites for members of that community. Our guest is Father James Martin. He's a Jesuit priest and editor-at-large for America Magazine. He's been writing about this, the wider issues involved here. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What did you think about that memo? How do you think the Catholic Church should work with the LGBT community? And vice versa. Call in at 800-642-1234, or you can email ideas@wpr.org. We'll go to your calls now. Aaron is on the line in Antioch. Aaron, hi. Hey.
Good afternoon, Rob. Hi, Father. This is Aaron. I just had one comment, and that is, this is the first I'm hearing of the memo, so I don't know the details of it, but the example that was given about a man in college who has a girlfriend, the example cited assumes that gentleman is having sex with his girlfriend, and I think it's incorrect to assume that. One might have a stronger possibility to assume that somebody who has same-sex attraction and is living that lifestyle probably is engaging in sexual activity with their partner. But I don't think that we should assume that either person is having sexual relations with their partner. So I just thought that example was poor and is incorrect and not fair to assume that a man in college is having sex with his girlfriend.
Aaron, thanks for the call. And Father Martin, maybe that gets back to your original point that in this case, the funeral rite shouldn't bring up the sex element in either case.
Well, then we can use the example of a couple who is engaged and living together. Right. I mean, you know, there's a couple who we can probably assume as, you know, at least intimate with one another. And if one or the other partner is killed, to not have the engaged person come would be unthinkable. And, you know, I mean, you can make the same case that, you know, if there was a same-sex couple living together, that they're not having sex either. The caller is assuming, therefore, that all the same-sex couples are just having sex, too. So I think the problem is we are so focused on treating LGBT people and looking at them through the lens of sex, and chastity that we are reducing them simply to sexual beings and, you know, sort of elevating same-sex relations as the worst and the only sin. I mean, you could also look at questions of funerals for the following categories: people who are divorced and remarried without an annulment, you know, people who are divorced, which is against the Gospels, right? Jesus is against that. Men who have fathered children out of wedlock, women who have had children out of wedlock. I mean, there are multiple sort of categories of people in, you know, who are straight, you know, and their sexual, you know, wrongdoings, you know, as according to the Catholic Church, who we regularly give funerals to. And, you know, we give funerals to people on, you know, who are like mafia people, people who have been in jail. I mean, so this kind of relentless focus on same-sex relations, I think, is really odd to sort of, you know, to just completely focus on them to the exclusion of the sexual morality of straight people, I think is really unfair and unjust.
Aaron, thanks for the call. Go next to Charlie with us in Milwaukee. Charlie, hi.
Hi, thank you. Father, I agree with you that people are more than just sexual beings, but again, sexual activity is a very large part of a lot of people's lives. From marriage, heterosexual marriage, it is the reason why people get married. It's to produce children. The Catholic Church has said that homosexual sexual activity is inauthentic, and yet we see in nature multiple, in fact, numerous types of homosexual behavior in the animal kingdom. Can't we now assume that homosexual activity for some people is actually authentic and not inauthentic, and we should recognize that and not allow that to obscure people from being part of the church.
Charlie, thanks for the call. Father Martin, what do you think?
Yeah, that's a very important question. I think, you know, as we reflect on, you know, science and psychology and physiology, biology, it's important for the church to continue to reflect on, you know, homosexuality and all kinds of sexuality. I think one of the biggest strides, you know, to this gentleman's phone call is that I think you will find very few people now in the Catholic Church, and this was, you know, different 40 or 50 years ago, that would say that it's not innate. You know, I mean, there are very few, I think, reputable theologians and certainly priests and pastors and bishops and church leaders, lay leaders as well, you know, who now don't understand that you are born that way, right? And you are born, you know, with that sexual orientation. So I think that's a real step forward. Now, I think that raises a host of questions in terms of the Catholic sort of approach to that. You know, what does that mean, therefore? Is it as culpable? What does that mean in terms of natural law? So I think it's a very important question. And I think, you know, one of the reasons that, you know, we're moving in this is that more and more people are coming out, more and more people are known to their families and to their parishes and to their, you know, church communities, and we're able to reflect on that a little bit more now that we are able to listen to people. And that's one of the things I'm calling for in my book, just listening to people's experiences of who they are, how they got that way, and what their hopes and dreams are.
Thanks for your call, Charlie. We're talking to Father James Martin about the relationship between the Catholic Church and the lesbian, gay, transgender, bisexual community. We'll go next to Michelle on the line in Green Bay. Michelle, hi.
Hi. Thanks. So I appreciate the discussion about sexual behavior, and I actually thought it was a good analogy, the college student analogy, but you know, we haven't said anything about the T in LGBTQ, the transgender people. This is not about necessarily about sexual behavior, this one or that one. It's about the identity of the person. And is the church saying to transgender people, you are not who you don't know who you really are. We know who you are. If that's the case, that's a whole different issue. And I think, you know, I know people who are divorced Catholics who are told by the church, you're not really divorced because it was a sacramental marriage, and so you just think you're divorced unless you get an annulment. You know, that those, when the church says you are not who you think you are not who you know yourself to be, I think that's a whole different area. And I'd just like to hear Father Martin's, you know, take on that transgender part of the
Michelle, thanks. Gotcha. Father Martin, what do you say?
Yeah, I think that's an excellent question. It has sort of different layers of answer. First of all, we have to sort of think about what we mean when we say the church, right? What does the church say? Well, it's beyond just, you know, the Pope and bishops and the hierarchy. The church is also pastors and lay workers who are working in parishes, you know, mothers and fathers. So the church, I think, says different things to transgender people. For example, you know, the Pope says something very different than, say, you know, the lay principal of a Catholic high school, right? I mean, that's the church, too, where a lot of transgender children, for example, are feeling, you know, welcome or not, basically. So we have to be careful about the church. It's not a monolith, in a sense. The other thing is that I think secular society is still coming to grips with and still trying to understand transgenderism, right? And so, in a sense, I am not surprised that the church is still reflecting on this. So I'm always very careful in, you know, kind of offering my opinion on this because I know very little about it. I know transgender people and I'm learning. I think what is incumbent in for the church right now is to listen again. I mean, we are still just coming to understand that, right? And it's still sort of becoming more and more out in the open. So I think what the church needs to do is listen to these people and their experiences. I met a couple a few months ago in Boston, and it was a cisgender woman, a woman who had been born a woman, and a transgender woman, a woman who had been born a man, and they were married. And they said, we've been married for 25 years. And I was kind of shocked because, you know, same-sex marriage had not been, you know, legal for that long in Massachusetts. Well, it turned out that they were married when the transgender woman was a man. And I thought, well, this is really interesting. What can the church learn from them about fidelity and about love? And so the church, I think, is called to listen to these people because, you know, their experiences are important, and the Holy Spirit, to use some theological language, is at work through them, too.
Thanks a lot for that call, Michelle. And Father Martin, you're making the case that a lot of people need to listen more. Do you feel like, as you try to spread that message, people are listening to you within the church, within the LGBT community?
I think for the most part, yes. And I, you know, I just had lunch with a bishop today, believe it or not, in New York, and we had a long conversation. People, I think, are more open because people know more and more LGBT people. You know, even 40 or 50 years ago would have been this huge mystery and this kind of huge scandal. But, you know, more and more people are out in parish life, certainly in family life, but in parish life, too. I mean, music ministers and directors of religious education and teachers and you know, all sorts of people. So the church, I think, is, you know, the church, the hierarchical church and the institutional church is more willing now to listen to people, which I think is all to the good.
Father Martin, thanks for joining us today.
My pleasure.
We've been talking to Father James Martin. He's a Jesuit priest and the editor-at-large for America magazine. He's the author of the book Building a Bridge, How the Catholic Church and the LGBT Community Can Enter into a Relationship of Respect, Compassion, and Sensitivity. We started, among other issues, with a memo leaked from the Madison Catholic Diocese on how to handle funeral rites for people who had participated in same-sex relationships.